Welcome to this podcast called Curious About Recovery. I am Kirsten Honeyball. I am your host. And in this podcast, I'll be diving deep into eating disorders, which are complex and challenging to navigate. So whether you're a sufferer, a professional, a family or loved one of a sufferer, you can join me as I get curious by interviewing professionals, chatting to eating disorder survivors, and sharing my personal experience with an eating disorder so that you can better understand various perspectives, remove stigma, hear inspiring testimonies, and simply get curious about all things eating disorder related. I would like to put out a trigger warning. These episodes explore the topic of eating disorders, and some content may be triggering to listeners. Topics explored may mention, but are not limited to, trauma, diets, food and body types, suicide, mental illness, substance use, self-harm, violence, gender identification topics, and more. Please take care before listening to any episodes. It's important to note that this podcast is not aimed to diagnose, treat, or cure any form of mental illness and should not be seen as a replacement for treatment of eating disorders. Everything said here is expressed in relation to personal and professional opinions, and listeners should be encouraged to view these episodes as an open-minded exploration of various possibilities and perspective rather than hard facts and solutions. Please take what applies or resonates with you and leave the rest. And if you're struggling with an eating disorder, don't hesitate to reach out to me at kirsten@kirstenhoneyball.co.za. Today, I'm going to be talking about one of my favorite topics in my personal recovery and just in general. And this topic is about music. It's important for me to give you a little bit of background as to why I get so incredibly excited about this topic. So I'm just going to give you some background history and kind of how music has played a role in my life. And then being the eager and inquisitive person that I am, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about, or briefly, about some of the research I found around music and how it can help with the mental health process or healing. So if you don't know already, I am actually a musician, and music has always been a really, really big part of my life. So I played trumpet in a jazz band and an orchestra, and I remember just the feeling that I would get when I played my trumpet. There was something magical, and it gave me the sense of kind of being able to feel the feelings that I was feeling in a way that I couldn't quite understand. And I remember sitting in the orchestra and just feeling the energy of big swells of music and the rolling drums and the timpani, and experiencing a world of emotions while I was listening to the music that I was also a part of creating, which was magnificent on its own. But how music played a role for me from the beginning was I found a very strong connection to music. So when I would date a guy, it would always be someone who was musical because that's what attracted me to them. And when I would feel down or depressed, I would go to music because it made me feel better. I even remember my mom, when I was going through quite a bout of depression, I was very angry as a teenager, and my mom would say, "Oh, it's fine." As soon as she gets back from her gig, her, you know, playing in the jazz band or whatever, she'll feel better. And it always happened. No matter what was going on for me, every single time I engaged in music, especially with other people, I would find that there was a part of my soul that was re-nourished. And so music has always played a very big role in my life. Not only did it bring me immense joy, but it also taught me things like discipline, you know, showing up every single day to rehearse a piece of music and go over and over to try and get something that I could see progress. And it gave me a sense of accomplishment. It helped me tap into emotions that I couldn't easily navigate. And it also helped kind of calm my nervous system. I have ADHD, so when I would sit and play the piano, my hands would become occupied and my brain would become occupied, and it felt like there was a blanket of noise that was released out of my brain. I'm hoping that that makes sense, but it was kind of like if I could imagine taking ADHD medication versus sitting and playing a musical instrument, the way it affected my brain and my thoughts was pretty much the same. So music became a therapeutic element of my life. However, I only see that in hindsight now because, unfortunately, along my journey, I fell deeper and deeper into disordered eating and bulimia and exercise addiction and all of that and drug and alcohol abuse. And the music started falling away from my life. I stopped playing in the bands. I stopped playing my instruments. I gave up piano completely. I stopped singing. And with this relationship between myself and music diminishing, I could see a rise in the disordered eating. Throughout university, I did dabble a little bit in music with other people and played in bands and stuff like that. But for the most part, I used my music as a tool to connect with people I could drink and party with. So it wasn't a healing form of music for me. And I would just go and I would sing and that would be it. There was no mindfulness about it. In my recovery, music played an immense role because it started to come back into my life. And the first way that this happened was in my first year of recovery, I was dating a musician, surprise, surprise, and I happened to mention to him that I had always wanted to play guitar and I'd never tried it. And so he actually bought me a guitar for my birthday. There was a whole bunch of other stuff going on at the time, but one of the things I really remember that was so powerful was when I had urges to binge or purge or do something destructive or use a drug or alcohol, I would pick up the guitar and I would start playing. And sometimes that playing would be practicing. So it would be learning chords, learning scales, finger exercises and that kind of thing. And sometimes it was simply just engaging in what the instrument was doing. So I remember one night just sitting with the guitar on my lap and I was dying to purge a meal that I'd just eaten. And I picked up the guitar and I just started playing with the strings. And I had no idea what I was doing, but I just engaged with the feeling of what the strings were doing. And the urge eventually passed. And it was such a healing process for me. And I've noticed that in my life, whenever I'm neglecting this connection to music for me, I notice that the thoughts of the eating disorder and the desires and the behaviors and the urges seem a little bit louder. And it is only through creating that space for allowing my creative self to connect musically do I find that those voices are diminished. Now, I think, and this is a whole other topic, is that people who struggle with eating disorders have a large level of denying oneself their creative selves. Because, you know, I guess when you are being creative, it requires you to assess your imperfections and let them go and not be good at something and have to persevere and keep showing up. And this is what music teaches you. It teaches you to kind of marry the idea of intention and discipline and perseverance along with this idea of getting out of your comfort zone and being in the unknown and getting things wrong and making space for things to not make sense. So for me, on a personal level, music has really played a huge role in my ability to kind of resist urges, as it helped calm my brain when there was too much noise. It helped me do something tactile, so there was something that I was occupying my hands with, and pretty much helped me get through urges. At this time, while I was in early stages of recovery and I was learning how to play the guitar and I was reigniting my connection with music through singing and piano and trumpet, I also started listening to meditative frequencies and binaural beats. I don't really know how I stumbled across this. It must have been something I read or someone who suggested it to me. But regardless of how it happened, I found myself doing this on a more frequent basis. I would go onto some streaming platform like YouTube or Spotify, and I would listen to some kind of meditative frequency. I would just look up in the search bar, meditative frequency or music for anxiety or focus or sadness or grief or whatever it was that I was experiencing. And then I would go and I'd listen to that. And when I was at work, I would have my headphones on. And while I was doing my work, I would just be listening to these for sometimes hours at a time. And other times it was just a short little spurt of time where I would just close my eyes and be in a meditative state. Or maybe when I was cooking a meal, I would put this meditative music on. And it just felt really intuitive for me and really natural. And something shifted when I started doing this more frequently to be able to cope with emotions in a more balanced way, to be able to cope with urges and anxiety and all of that in a more balanced way. And there were even times where I would be in a meditation and I would have these immense visualizations. And these visualizations would just expand my mind, and it would feel like there were shifts happening to me on a level that I couldn't quite explain. And it always left me feeling calmer or more focused, or the urges that I was having would subside. I would even find myself getting inspired to write music that was about my recovery or my life or anything like that. And there was one song in particular that I really, really enjoy, and I'll actually include it at the end of this podcast for you to listen to if you like, but it's called Bright Smile. And what happened there was one evening I had gone into a really bad relapse with the binging and purging, and I just felt so dark. I felt like there was such little hope for me. I was really, really in a bad place. And I wrote this song called Mental Illness, which was about not being able to escape this cycle of darkness in the mental illness that I experienced. And I just felt like it was never going to get better for me. And the next morning, I woke up and I felt refreshed. I felt inspired, and I wrote a song called Bright Smile. And it was just about giving yourself grace and forgiveness so that you can move past the feelings of hopelessness. So I will share that with you guys at the end, because I really find that it was special to me. And if you are feeling hopeless, then maybe it will ignite some kind of hope in your journey. Interestingly enough, I then, after varsity and going into a rehabilitation center and moving cities and my parents getting divorced and a whole bunch of things happening, I found myself in Durban in South Africa. And there I was working. And I was working in a job that, you know, it had its rewards and it had its perks and all of that, but there was something missing. I was still in a position where I was helping other people, where I was feeling a level of accomplishment, where I was making good connections and relationships. But I felt like that musical, creative energy inside of me was being diminished. And it was feeling lost. And I remember about maybe 4 or 5 years after having worked and not really paid any attention to my musical self once again, I found myself stuck in old behavior, old thinking, and all of that. And I remember having this moment with what I believe is God, just saying, why would you place this music in my heart if it wasn't meant to be explored and it wasn't meant to be felt? And the crazy thing is that I just then laid back and I said I was ready. And I felt this beautiful wind just come over me. The only thing I can describe it as is the Holy Spirit, but whatever you think that might have been, it might just have been my thoughts. But I felt incredibly inspired. And very soon after that, and when I say soon, I mean within the same week, I was awarded a scholarship to study music production and sound engineering. This was just a beautiful concoction of synchronistic events that just happened to fall into place. Like, for instance, I bought a new piano because my piano was broken, and I had what I believe as God say to me, just play your piano, just play your piano and everything will be okay. And I listened to that. I listened to that creative desire to follow music. And not to get into the whole story, but if I hadn't played that piano, I wouldn't have then gone the next week to record a piano song with one of my friends, Catello. And if I hadn't recorded that song, I wouldn't have had something to submit to Abbey Road in order to apply for the scholarship. So just like I said, a beautiful golden thread of wonderful events just from listening to the thing that said to me, just play your music, just go after the music, just be with it. And so I, at the age of 28, I was 28, yeah, I packed up my whole life. I left my job, I left my partner in Durban. Well, we didn't break up, we went long distance, but it was an entire year of not being in the same town. I sold all my stuff, I moved, and I just went with it. And I followed where the music was calling me to go. Now, this year at Abbey Road was probably one of the best years, probably the best year of my entire life, because I was completely enveloped in music and people who understood the power of music and how beautiful it is. And it was very interesting for me because I look at all these synchronicities and my relationship with music, and I see how God has just like intertwined all of these beautiful things in order to get me to the space that I never thought was possible. And then I started learning about the theory and the science of music. And this now, wow, sparked my interest even more, because now I'm thinking, you know, there's more to it than just this intuitive feeling. There's actually a science behind why music is so powerful for mental health. We learned about sound theory and how sound is actually a form of energy. And it got me thinking about, you know, these binaural beats and the sound frequencies that I had been listening to. And I was wondering, okay, so why did those things help? Why did they make me feel better? How did they help me manage my anxiety and my urges? And so now I'm on like a wild goose chase, just trying to find out about the science of music and how it affects brain chemistry and the way the brain works, the way the central nervous system works and all of that. I read books by Joe Dispenza, who talks about brain and heart coherence. I read books about the Safe and Sound Protocol, and it reminded me of this story that I once heard, which I then went to research a little bit more about. It was about this Japanese scientist and healer, and I'm probably going to get his name pronounced incorrectly, but Masaru Emoto. He discovered how sound, different sounds, actually affect water's crystal structure. So water can actually store and absorb sound effects because sound is energy. So this scientist and healer used an electron microscope to show how frozen water's structure depends on the sounds that it absorbs. So he would play different types of music to the water or near the water, and he would observe how the crystal structure of the water would change depending on what kind of music or sound or even words were spoken to this water. So his studies showed that certain types of sound, like classical music, could generate these crystalline patterns, while things like distorted sound and noise and chaos would have more of a negative, if you want to call it that, effect on the water's crystal structure. So I thought to myself, well, I mean, we as humans, we're 70% water, so surely if water is affected that much by sound, then our bodies surely then are affected that way too. And if our bodies, water, is responding to sound in different ways and forming in different ways, and on another note, water is one of the primary tools in carrying nutrients around the body. So if our water is responding negatively to a certain sound, then maybe the nutrients in our body aren't being absorbed correctly. And, you know, this will have a knock-on or ripple effect to the way our brain chemistry is structured, the way our hormones are balanced or developed. So when we talk about how sound or music affects the body or water, we're not only looking at music specifically, we also look at sound in general. You know, how does a sound affect you energetically? If you think about it, and I know that this might be quite a broad topic, but one that's being spoken about more frequently, if you sit outside in a beautiful garden and there's birds chirping and you can hear some water trickling in a fountain somewhere, you're probably going to feel calm. Whereas if you're sitting at the side of a freeway, you're probably going to feel a little bit more tense, a little bit more anxious. So it shows that the sounds that we are perceiving are being registered in different ways and therefore can affect the way we feel. So I know I'm going round and round here, but there's so much to share. The important thing that I want to get across is this idea that not only does sound physically change the way that we think or feel, but the act of creating music or creating sound or listening to music or making music can really have healing effects on a psychological level. And now having evidence-based research showing how it can have a physical or physiological effect on us as well. So now let's get into a little bit of about behind what these things like binaural beats and music therapy and all of that are actually doing on a scientific level. So to explain to you what binaural beats are when two tones, so a single frequency, are played in the left and the right ear. So you'll say, for instance, you have headphones on and one frequency like 405 hertz is being played in one ear and another frequency like 415 hertz is being played in the other ear. And this happens simultaneously. And what happens in the brain is the brain perceives, through hearing these two different tones together, a creation of a new third tone, which is the frequency that is actually equivalent to the difference of the two tones. So in this case that I've just explained to you, you would be hearing a frequency of 10 hertz. Now, why this is important to know what frequency is being played is because the brain actually operates on different frequencies at different stages of alertness or sleep or in meditation or something like that. So there's different types of brain wave states. The first one is beta waves, which is between 13 and 16 hertz. And this occurs when we are awake and we're alert. Then we've got alpha waves, which is between 8 and 12 hertz. And this happens when we are relaxed, maybe in a state of meditation, or that state just before falling asleep. You know, so you're not quite awake, but you're also not quite asleep. Then you've got theta waves, which is between 4 and 7 hertz, which is usually lighter stages of sleep or when you are in the process of waking up. And delta waves, which is between 0.5 and 4 hertz, is a state of deep sleep. So you might be asking, well, what does this have to do with, you know, anxiety, eating disorders, all of that stuff? And the reason that it's important, or why things like binaural beats are effective, is because of something called the entrainment process, which is basically showing when a tone is perceived by the brain, the brainwaves actually can align themselves to the frequency or the beat that they are listening to. So for instance, if you're listening to 3 hertz, for enough time, what actually happens is your brain starts to go, okay, I recognize this as the pattern to align to, and it starts producing that pattern as well. Now, while this is important for altering your mood or managing anxiety and all of that, is because of the different states or waves that I spoke about previously. Now, different brainwave patterns are associated with certain states of the brain or the mind. So if your brain is in anxiety, it is operating at a certain brainwave state. If it is in calm relaxation, it is operating in a different brainwave state. And so the theory shows, evidence suggests that when we are able to align our brainwave state with that of a place of calm and meditation, such as the state that we're in when we are just about to fall asleep, or when we are aligning our brainwave state with a frequency that is promoting alertness and focus, it can actually help us manage whatever it is that we're needing to manage at that time, whether that's to be able to help a person who has ADHD and who needs to focus on studying for an exam, or whether it's a person who is experiencing severe anxiety and who needs to calm down. And how this is helpful for eating disorders. Well, people who have eating disorders or who are stuck in that cyclical habitual behavior around irrational thoughts and feelings and all of that around food and their body, a lot of the time we're operating in a state of immense fear. So we are in the fight or flight response. So our bodies and our brains are registering that we are in danger, or that we're not safe. And to look at the brain science of it, when we are in a place where we are registering a perceived threat, and say, for example, a normal person, and I say quote unquote normal person, might experience a threat like an intruder in their home, and that is a very real and perceived threat. However, a person who has an eating disorder might see a type of food and feel as afraid as if someone was holding a gun to their head. It's the same fear response. So our brains actually go into a state where we're unable to make rational decisions and to understand our cues, like our social cues or our satiation cues, pleasure, fear, hunger, fullness, and all of that. So when we're in this fight or flight response, which is triggered by emotions of fear or anxiety or anger, that in an eating disorder is often a result of a trigger from a past trauma or of a learned response, fear response to food in the body, what happens is a part of the brain called the amygdala actually gets hijacked. And this hinders our ability to think rationally or act appropriately in whatever stressful or perceived dangerous situation we're experiencing. Now, usually when we are feeling stressed, say from work or from an uncomfortable conversation or some kind of phobia or something, the frontal lobes of the brain will usually override the amygdala's kind of response so that we are still responding to whatever the stimulus is in a rational way. However, if the amygdala has now been hijacked and the stressful situation is so intense, this can actually lead to illogical and irrational behaviors. Now, this kind of gives you a little bit of information as to why when we're in heightened stress response, it can become so much harder to fight, I guess, the urges of disordered eating. Because through our experience, the learned response is that the eating disorder brings soothing and reprieve from discomfort and fear. Now, coupled with the fact that when hijacked, the brain's ability to think rationally and regulate cues and all of that is not really working, it makes it so much harder for us to act according to the desires that we want for our recovery journey. So it would make sense that when the brain registers that a perceived threat is reduced, so when we are managing our stress, when we're managing that stress, fight or flight response, it makes sense that our rational or conscious thinking might have a better chance at driving the decisions we make, making it much easier to not go for that binge or that compulsive act or that purge or something like that. So bringing it back to the meditative frequencies and binaural beats and all of that stuff, to understand on a scientific level that we are able to move the brain into different states. And if we are moving the brain into a different state, we're able to reduce the perceived threat because we're signaling to the brain that it can be calm and therefore it can make better decisions. There's reasons why things like the Safe and Sound Protocol exist as a very effective modality of therapy for people who struggle with mental health and learning disabilities and anxiety and depression and all of that. For those of you who don't know, the Safe and Sound Protocol was developed by Dr. Stephen Porges, I hope I've pronounced that correctly, who developed the polyvagal theory, which is something I speak about in a lot of podcasts that I present. And this is basically a way of using specifically and specially processed music that is administered to a person. This interrupts and redirects a physiological feedback loop in the brain with cues of safety. These safety cues help shift the nervous system out of chronic fight or flight defense and high alert into a safe and connected state. So showing again that music has the ability to change the brain from a state where it is so on high alert and in fear and wanting to kind of act out on that impulse to a space where you can actually go, oh, I can process this emotion. I can feel this thing. I don't have to act on that compulsive action or behavior. I can process this thought. I am safe. And how the Safe and Sound Protocol does this is by stimulating neural networks associated with listening to this filtered music and focuses on the frequency range of the human voice, which I guess is why it's so calming to listen to a human voice. And through this, the Safe and Sound Protocol alters the way that sounds are interpreted. It moves the nervous system from a state of defense into safety, connection, and regulation. So taking all this kind of brain science stuff into account, it helps you understand how listening to an audio feed that is binaural beats or some kind of meditative frequency can have positive effects on things like anxiety, memory, mood, creativity, or even attention. And then how it played for me is it helped reduce the urges, which were conditioned or maladaptive coping mechanisms to perceived threat. So when we really simplify it, we look at music as having the ability to take you from a place where you don't feel okay to a place where you feel okay enough to not have to harm yourself, which is exactly how it's played out in my life. And we can even take it one step further and see how music can be a wonderful distraction. You know, it's something that we focus on. And if you're listening to music in headphones or something like that, you actually become a part of the music. And sometimes I really enjoy a process of cleaning my room or making a meal or something like that when I have my headphones on and I'm listening to music that makes me feel happy and upbeat or that evokes emotions that make me feel deep and meaningful and conscious. And one of the most beautiful songs that I ever listened to in my recovery when I was really, really just in a sticky spot was Trusty and True by, I think it's Damien Rice. And so if you haven't listened to that song, go and listen to it with some beautiful headphones on and just feel the power of beautiful music. It's not surprising that for centuries and centuries, we've used music as a way to communicate with people, as a way to add sustenance to rituals and ceremonies. Music has always been a way that people have connected with God, with nature. And anyone listening to this can relate to the fact that there's certain songs that make you feel different ways. And there's actually science behind that. You know, there's music that can increase your dopamine and your endorphin levels. It's even been shown that music can have an effect on immunoglobulin, which is a cell that seeks and attacks viruses. So music has been shown to increase the amount of immunoglobulin cells found in the body. And the increase in these cells increase your immune system and your ability to fight potential illness. Music also has been shown to lower cortisol levels, which is the stress hormone. So listening to music can help fight anxiety and nervousness. There you have a little story of how music has played in my life and how I kind of dived into the science around how music actually changes the brain. I know that there's a whole bunch more of the science stuff that I haven't dived into today, but the important part of this podcast is to encourage you to try using music as an effective tool to managing the eating disorder compulses and urges. I really, really mean it. And if you're struggling to find what to listen to, there's a couple of YouTube channels that I really love. Magnetic Minds, Sleep Tube, Love Motives, and a bunch of others that I will leave in the show notes and the comments. You can also go on to Spotify. There's plenty of meditative frequencies and calming meditative music that you can tune into. And just try it, you know. And yes, trying to listen to music when you're feeling like you've got an urge to act out on the eating disorder is very helpful. But I also want to encourage you to try playing music, even if it's singing or dancing to music, something that involves you being interactive with the process of music. And then also to try and do it on a daily basis. So maybe how that might look for you is waking up and for the first 10 minutes of your day, instead of going on to Instagram or Facebook or anything like that, just tuning into some meditative frequency and listening to it and kind of feeling the music and making it a part of your life, and just see how much better your day will be and how much easier it is to cope with those urges when you are using music as an effective tool for managing your mental health. And so I really hope that this has inspired you to give music a try, in whatever way, shape, or form that it might manifest for you, and for you to let me know how it goes. You know, I'd love to know whether this music thing has played any role in your life, and if so, how it has. And if you have had music play a role in your recovery journey, I would love to have you on the show to talk to you about it. So please reach out, and I hope that you find healing with music, just as I have. And for those of you who do want to listen to it, I am now going to play Bright Smile for you, because it is a song that I wrote about forgiving yourself in the process of your stumbling blocks in your eating disorder recovery. Thanks for listening.
The lightness of a smile, bring it my way. See how the freckles, they light up on my face. Rewired strings, simplest of things. Grand pianos, easy listening. Sweet forgiveness. Knock at my door, I won't refuse you entrance anymore. Who knew that people could change? Float on a different cloud that they had made. Silently safe, momentarily graced. Tender collision, take a deep breath. Sweet forgiveness, knock at my
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. If you have liked it, share it with people who you think might benefit from listening to it as well. Don't forget to go to my Instagram page called @curiousaboutrecovery to find out about upcoming episodes or to browse the episodes of the past. You can also follow my page called @KirstenHoneyball where you can get inspiration for your eating disorder recovery.